Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Carrie Antholis. This season of Jury Duty explores the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, who was charged with the reckless homicide of Joseph Rosenbaum, the intentional homicide of Anthony Huber, and the attempted intentional homicide of Gage Grosskreutz. As Rittenhouse was the undisputed shooter of all three men, his legal team argued that the shootings were in self-defense. In our last episode, we concluded our exploration of the testimony given by state's witness Jason Lukowski, one of the armed individuals who was with the defendant on the night of the shootings. On today's episode, we examine the testimonies of two more state's witnesses, DNA analyst Amber Rasmussen and Sarah Hughes, Anthony Huber's great aunt. In questioning these witnesses, we see James Krause make his trial debut for the prosecution. That's all coming up right after the break.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
After Jason Lukowski steps down from the witness stand, James Krause, a 16-year veteran prosecutor for the Kenosha County DA's office, rises to make his first appearance on behalf of the state in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Krause bears a passing resemblance to the actor Kevin James of Paul Blart Mall Cop fame. He sports a crew cut and wears a gray suit with a blue striped tie and a white dress shirt. Krause's first witness is Amber Rasmussen, a forensic scientist and DNA analyst for the state of Wisconsin, who is in court to discuss DNA samples collected from both the barrel and the trigger of Kyle Rittenhouse's AR-15 after the shooting. Krause appears to want to use Rasmussen's testimony to guide the jury to the inference that, since neither Anthony Huber's nor Joseph Rosenbaum's DNA was found on Kyle Rittenhouse's weapon, Rittenhouse was never in danger of losing possession of his weapon.
In this case, we received three sets of swabs from a firearm, two sets of swabs from an ammunition magazine, and three standard or reference samples from known individuals.
What is a standard or reference sample?
A standard or reference is a sample that is directly collected from a person, and we use that to establish what that individual's DNA profile is, and we can then use that for comparison to any questioned evidentiary profiles we obtain.
And the three standards in this case you receive from Joseph Rosenbaum, Anthony Huber, and Kyle Rittenhouse?
Yes.
Rasmussen then explains the process that she used to analyze these standards.
So in this case, what was received were envelopes containing swab boxes, which are small boxes that contain basically a wooden stick with cotton on the end, a long-handled Q-tip. And each of those boxes was marked as having been collected from a different area of either the firearm or from a magazine. In this case, there was one set of swabs marked as having been collected from a trigger, another from a barrel guard, and another from a pistol grip, and then two sets from a magazine. And what we do is we will cut off the cotton portion of that swab, and that is what proceeds in our testing to try to develop a DNA profile. There was DNA detected on all five of those evidentiary items.
And what did you do once DNA was detected?
I attempted to develop a profile from each of those and then attempted to interpret those profiles and make any comparisons to those.
Now, for the trigger swab, was there any DNA found on from the trigger swab?
Yes.
And who was the source of that DNA?
A single source male profile was obtained from the swabs from the trigger, and Kyle Rittenhouse is the source of that DNA profile.
And what were the findings on the barrel guard?
The barrel guard contained a mixture of DNA, so there was DNA present from at least two people. This contained DNA from at least one male. And assuming that there were two people present, I was able to do a comparison to each of the three different individuals in this case. For the barrel guard, this was a two-person mixture, and assuming there are two people present, we compared two different hypotheses or propositions or explanations for the data. The first explanation is that this DNA profile came from the person of interest in an unknown individual, and the second is it came from two unknown individuals.
So am I understanding that there's strong support to exclude Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber on that DNA swap, on that DNA analysis, but very strong support to include Kyle Rittenhouse?
Yes.
Is it fair to say that's essentially the same findings as the swabs from the barrel guard, but the numbers and the likelihoods are different?
They are similar conclusions, yes.
So if I touch this television here briefly, I may or may not leave DNA behind on it.
You probably left DNA behind. Whether it was enough to be detectable via our methods is a different question.
But if I sat here and touched it for a longer period of time, or if my hands were particularly sweaty, would it be fair to say that it'd be more likely there'd be enough DNA to test?
Yes.
Now, we in the courtroom have seen a video that shows Mr. Huber making contact with the firearm that was in question here. How could it be that Mr. Huber makes contact with the firearm and does not leave DNA behind?
It, as far as leaving DNA behind or being detected on the samples we received, touch DNA, again, can vary. There may have been very little DNA on his hands when he handled that object. It may have been wiped away later. The sample may have been exposed to heat or moisture or undergone a duration of time before it was collected, and all of those things will limit the amount of DNA that can be detected.
Rittenhouse attorney Corey Shirofasi begins his cross-examination by seeking to undermine the prosecution's suggestion that the DNA evidence shows that neither Huber nor Rosenbaum touched the barrel of Rittenhouse's weapon.
Can I ask you, Ms. Rasmussen, when you get a sample to be tested, who tells you what area, in this case, so there's a firearm, right? You test?
The DNA unit did not receive the firearm itself in this case.
What did you receive?
We received swabs that were collected from a firearm.
Would you agree that you never got a swab from the barrel of that gun?
The barrel guard was the closest, to my knowledge, that was obtained from the barrel of the gun.
Do you know what a barrel guard is?
I do not.
You'd agree, however, it's listed barrel guard. There's nothing on here listing barrel of gun.
Correct. Okay.
So if, for example, Joseph Rosenbaum touched the barrel of that gun, we'll never know that, right?
I have no way of determining it.
Shirofasi then shows the witness a photograph, Exhibit 45, that appears to show one person on the ground holding an AR-15 by the bottom of the weapon and another person holding the barrel of the same weapon. At Shirofasi's request, the prosecution stipulates that the person on the ground is Kyle Rittenhouse and that the person holding the barrel is Anthony Huber.
In Exhibit 45, I see a person walking the opposite direction of the whoever's taking the photo, and a person on the ground, and there's an object connecting them. The person on the ground appears to be holding on to the object.
Okay. So, Ms. Rasmussen, if I told you that person standing there is Anthony Huber, okay, that we agree on that, you agree that it appears Anthony Huber is touching that, and we agree that's a gun. You'd agree that Anthony Huber is touching that gun, right? Appears to be he's touching that gun?
It appears to be.
Okay. Now, in the areas, so the fact there's no DNA present in the areas you were asked to look at doesn't mean that the person didn't actually touch the firearm. We see it, right?
Correct.
Shirofasi then shows the witness another photograph from a different angle.
The fact that, I don't know where that is on the gun, but the fact that the DNA isn't there. Everybody thinks DNA is this thing that proves everything. You'd agree that we can see he's actually touching the firearm.
What is your question?
Well, the fact that it's not present And I don't know where on the gun that is, but the fact that DNA is not present in any of the areas of the firearm for Mr. Huber doesn't mean that he didn't actually touch it.
Correct. Whether DNA was detected from an individual or not does not mean that they did not touch that item.
And the, I think you said, and tell me if I have this right, the shorter amount of time someone touches something, the less likely there'll be DNA which you can compare or find.
Yes, the less an item is handled, the less I would expect there to be an opportunity for DNA to transfer.
Was there ever a follow-up request by law enforcement to test any other areas of a gun, of that gun?
Not to my knowledge. That may not have gone directly to me, though it may have been to someone else at the crime laboratory.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Prosecutor James Krause next calls Sarah Hughes to the stand. Hughes is Anthony Huber's great aunt, and Krause begins by asking her about her relationship with Huber.
And would you have considered yourself close to Mr. Huber?
Yeah, even when he was a child, we had kind of a special connection. I was born in Kenosha, I moved away, came back in 2011, and from that time, we became even closer.
Now, you said you had a special connection. What do you mean by that?
He was a redhead. I used to be a redhead. his immediate family, they were all blondes. So he kind of gravitated to me at family gatherings and things, even though when he was a child, I really only saw him, you know, holidays and when I visited Kenosha, so, you know, 4 or 5 times a year. But even then, he would gravitate towards me because I could talk to him about things he was interested in. I mean, we shared interests in art and music and computers, Star Wars, you know, things that little boys like to talk about.
And even back then, did you ever know Anthony Huber to use a skateboard?
Always. The skateboard, I must confess, was kind of an annoyance to me because when I first moved back here in 2011, we had a family gathering. We had a dinner in the winter, and I lived close to Pennoyer Park, and Anthony arrived in a car. There was a foot of snow on the ground. He walked into my house with a skateboard and was going to, you know, skate on my laminated floors. And I said, you can't skate in the house. And where are you going to skate anyway? Because there's snow on the ground. And he, you know, picked up his skateboard. He went out and he found a place to skate in the snow. I mean, even shortly before he died, you know, when I would take him somewhere, he would know I was picking him up in a car. He was going to go home in a car. He would still have the skateboard in case there was a chance, you know, there was an interesting parking lot somewhere and he could go out and skate.
To the best of your knowledge, was that his main mode of transportation if he wasn't getting rides from you or someone else?
Yes. He skated sometimes to jobs, if I wasn't available to take him there or one of his friends, he would, skate home frequently, quite long distances. Some of the temp jobs that he had were out by Jelly Belly and, out by I-94, and if people don't know where that is. Anton's, I mean, that's like Cooper Road or something. And so miles, he would go on a skateboard.
Did Mr. Huber have any special interest in the Jacob Blake shooting or the events that followed?
Yes.
And what was that special interest?
He told me that he knew Jacob. We had Anthony would sometimes want to go with me out to Petrifying Springs. There's a memorial bench there that is dedicated to my son who passed away. And after Jacob was shot, Anthony wanted to go out there with me. And while we were there, he told me he had known Jacob. I frankly don't recall how well he knew him. I mean, it just sticks in my memory that he said he knew him. That was the reason why we went out that day. He knew that Jacob had children. He knew, you know, I remember him mentioning a few things about Jacob's life.
Prosecutor Krauss then asks Hughes about the day of August 25th, 2020.
Did you see him anytime that day?
Yes.
Why did you see him?
He stopped with Hannah late in the afternoon, maybe 3:30, 4 o'clock. They were on their way to do a lot of errands, and he stopped to, I think I gave him some mail, and he was on his way to a cell phone store.
Now, is this something that you would do? Would you occasionally give him money?
Mm-hmm.
And did he have a driver's license? Did he know how to drive?
Yeah, he got his driver's license the day of his birthday, the Friday before.
Okay. And who would go practice driving with him and things of that nature?
That was me.
You mentioned a Hannah. Who's Hannah?
Hannah was his girlfriend.
Krauss then references the video of the shooting of Huber and Grosskreutz collected by an independent reporter named Brendan Guttenschwager, who operates under the social media handle BG on the scene.
We've seen video here, and you may have seen video as well, that Anthony Huber ran towards Kyle Rittenhouse. Well, Kyle Rittenhouse was armed. Were you surprised when you heard about that? Were you surprised by his actions?
Yeah.
Had you ever seen Anthony Huber run towards danger?
Yes.
Sustained.
As to which ground?
Both. Well, maybe. Certainly on the second ground. Having a custom.
We've heard nothing about having a custom evidence in this case.
Pardon me?
We've heard nothing about having a custom evidence. I think I can rehabilitate.
Well, first off, you don't need to comment on the ruling. Secondly, there are different rules. And we've been talking about this all along. There are different rules. Let's take a break. Please don't talk about the case. Lunch is here.
The defense objection asserts that Krauss is seeking to elicit inadmissible habit and custom testimony. That is, testimony that suggests that because Huber acted in a certain way on one occasion means that he likely acted that same way on another occasion. Such evidence is generally inadmissible as character evidence. After the lunch break, Judge Bruce Schrader addresses the jury and tells them that the state decided to withdraw the question.
We had some additional discussion on the issues that were pending, and it has been decided the state has decided to withdraw the question which was asked.
The defense declines the opportunity to cross-examine the witness, and so with that, we conclude this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. We will, of course, discuss the interrogation strategies of both the prosecution and the defense during our weekly recap. And join us on our next episode as we explore the testimony of Carrie Ann Swart, the fiancée of the late Joseph Rosenbaum.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You can find more information about this trial at our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created, hosted, and produced by yours truly, Carrie Antholis. It was co-produced by Chris Tarracone and Aaron Karenik, and it was edited by Chris Tarracone. Our consulting producer is Brittany Bookbinder. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio, and Trial Audio is courtesy of Law and Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse.